Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, May 19th, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr., and joining me is Imran, the Don Khan.
Hi, Blessing. I need a haircut.
Dude, I'm with you. That's why I'm rocking this hat right now, because I feel like with every passing day, I just get more and more self-conscious about my hair. Like, It just keeps going and going. I have nowhere to go to.
I don't let my hair grow this long, so it's growing in weird ways I don't recognize of like, oh, why is it only in that direction and not like the other direction?
Wait, I want to chime in for a second. Imran, Your hair looks great. Let me see. Can you take off your headphones? I think it looks fine.
You look great. Stuff, like the growing on the side.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay. Yeah. No, I feel you. Okay. I see that. You got Benjamin Franklin thing going on.
Yeah, no, that's not a look I aspire to.
Yeah, I started to get the thing where now I can feel my hair. And this might sound like weird to most people, but for me, it's a weird thing where I'm feeling my hair behind my ears. And I'm like, that's not a usual feeling I feel, especially when I wake up. And so it's like, it's gotten to this weird place where now I'm actually between a rock and a hard place where I'm like, I could use this as an opportunity to like, when things open up, like get an actual like unique haircut that I've not gotten before. I could get like not a high top fade, but some sort of like fade to where I'm like high on the top and then short on the sides, which has become more in vogue now. Or I can just go back to my original self and just do a buzz cut.
See, unfortunately, you live in San Francisco, so getting a good haircut is expensive.
Yeah, that's the thing also too. Yeah, but like I don't mind it since like I've not paid for a haircut in quite a while at this point. Yeah. And so like I feel like it kind of balances out at a certain point.
Yeah, get your quarterly haircut and be like, all right, cool. I'm gonna bust the bank on this one.
Imran, how's your quarantine been? Because I feel like we haven't actually like checked up on you in a while.
I am fine. I've been going through video games, and that's like basically been my quarantine, is to go through my entire backlog. There's no chance I will ever go through the entire thing, but I'm discovering that like, oh, there's a pretty good reason some of this stuff was on my backlog and not like actively being played.
Yeah, like you were playing Dishonored before, and I saw you were playing, what were you playing recently? Spider-Man.
The Spider-Man DLC.
Yeah.
I love Spider-Man. DLC's not great. DLC's kind of, you can tell why it wasn't in the main game.
How'd you feel about that first episode? Because for me, I jumped in the first episode and I enjoyed it. I jumped into episode 2 and that's where I was like, I'm liking this, but I think I'm going to take a break, and I just never went back.
The first episode was like, okay, I can kind of see what they're going for. This is not as good as the main game, but I'm kind of there. The second episode, I'm like, no, they took every aspect that was bad about the first episode and just made it worse.
Yeah, and that's sort of what I started to gauge. Like, episode 2, I think, starts off with like a, is that the museum mission?
No, the first episode starts off with the museum. The second episode starts off the, like, all the cops getting killed.
Okay, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, now it's starting to come back. And I remember like hitting that point being like, all right, cool. Yeah, let's see how this goes. I still want to go back and finish it at some point because I just want an excuse to go back to Spider-Man because, like, overall, that's like an amazing game.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
The second episode story is like, it's a goddamn like Arkham Asylum or Batman Arkham plot. And yeah, it's so weird. It gets really grimdark for like no reason. And at the end of it, like, Yuri fucking kills a guy. And I'm so confused at this point. And I need to start the next DLC episode to figure out how they're going to walk that back, because they can't really have her just kill a guy. That's weird.
I want to see what your takeaway is. Like, I want you to report back once you actually finish it, because I'm curious to see like if that all comes together, because I don't remember that part, and I'm very curious to see like how that goes.
Yeah, I'm curious because somebody told me that the end of the DLC is a big setup for Spider-Man 2. So I'm like, okay, I might as well see it.
Interesting. Well, Imran, enough about Spider-Man. Let's talk about Assassin's Creed Valhalla getting or apparently being huge. Instead of small like we thought before. The Last of Us Part 2, the special edition PS4, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping, thank you to our Patreon producers, Mohammed Mohammed, Momo, Blackjack, and Al Tribesman. Today we're brought to you by Brooklinen and ExpressVPN, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have more story today.
A Baker's Dozen!
Starting with number one.
Yeah, that Twitter account perfectly cut off screams. That should be there.
Kevin could make that Twitter account every single week if we just submitted him. Story number one: Assassin's Creed Valhalla will actually be bigger than Odyssey. This of course comes as a surprise because we literally just reported last week that it'll be smaller. But from this article that I'm pulling from Lauren Morton at Rock Paper Shotgun, she writes. For a minute there, it sounded like Assassin's Creed Valhalla would actually be smaller than its enormous predecessor, Odyssey. Not so, says a Valhalla producer. Surprising no one, it will in fact be larger. Previously on How Big Is It Actually, Ubisoft's head of communications of the Middle East tweeted, and has since deleted, that Valhalla won't be the biggest, or won't be the longest, or biggest game in the series. In an interview with YouTuber Julian Chies, Ubisoft producer Julian LaFerriere, I'm going to go with LaFerriere, says the opposite. Quote, I would actually say in terms of range, it is probably a bit larger than Assassin's Creed Odyssey. I do not have the exact figures at this stage, but we've not only created... Something just dropped and I have no idea what that was. That was my phone. I do not have the exact figures at this stage, but we have not only created the whole country, which in this case is England, but also a good part of Norway too. There are other secret worlds, which I cannot speak about today, which contributed to the size of the game. It's not a small game. It is a game which is clearly ambitious, which will offer many, many hours of gameplay for players. Imran, were you on when we talked about this the last time?
I wasn't on, but I saw the original story.
How does this strike you? Do you prefer a larger Assassin's Creed or a smaller Assassin's Creed?
Honestly, at this point, I think I would go smaller. Like... I played the first 10 hours of Odyssey at a preview event, and that was enough for me to go like, yeah, this game is really huge, and apparently even opens up bigger than
Boo.
That after that.
His opinion sucks. Boo. Bigger is better. I love Odyssey so much.
Kevin was the one that chimed in last week and was saying that Kevin preferred a bigger Assassin's Creed.
Right, and that's, I think, people like Kevin are why they went back and walked that line back of, oh no, it's not actually that like small, it's actually way bigger. So the marketing line of it's smaller and that's more manageable probably doesn't sell as well as it's bigger than ever.
Do you feel like that's still the case? Because that's been the thing that I've kind of been trying to wrap my mind around is the fact that I feel like last week when we did get the report that Assassin's Creed Valhalla is smaller than Odyssey, like I feel like there was a number of people that we're excited about that. Like, even for me as somebody who like isn't like, I'm not an Assassin's Creed person, that for me probably could have been a selling point. Like, for me, I kind of prefer more contained games at this point, knowing that like Odyssey, like Greg's been playing Odyssey for what feels like forever, and he's talking about how like, oh yeah, he still has 50 to 80 hours left of content to consume just through the DLC. like, that's something that kind of makes me go, oh man, I don't know if I have it in me to play through a game that big. But if you came to me and told me that the next Assassin's Creed is like 40 hours long, that's something that's gonna likelier get me into it.
Didn't you just start playing Persona 5 Royale?
Listen, Kevin.
I'm just saying,
one of my biggest critiques with Persona 5 is that it's too long. That said, it's just so good the whole way through that, like, you know, I'm willing to make the sacrifice.
I mean, you mentioned Greg has been playing Odyssey forever. When I first met Greg, we talked about Red Dead Redemption versus Odyssey, and I don't think he's stopped playing it since then. Like, that game is very large. So one of the things I think about open world games is a problem in general is that at some point, the game design encourages you to constantly do other things and essentially burn yourself out on the open world before the main campaign is over. And that's one of the things I think Breath of the Wild does really well is that at any point, you can decide, okay, I'm done with this game, and just go to the final dungeon. I don't think that works necessarily for every video game. Like, obviously, Red Dead Redemption 2 is a linear story, but people are going to burn themselves out before the end of the game and then just kind of have to like do main missions while they're not feeling it so much anymore. That's kind of a problem I've been feeling with the larger, more RPG-like Assassin's Creed games is okay, I get it. I think I've had my fill. I'd like to finish, but like, no, there's still a bunch of story missions left to do. If I know this is a very hard thing to contextualize, but I would love for them to have like a bailout button of catch me up to the ending, and I just want to get mm-hmm. there and be like finish the game on my own terms. Obviously, they'll never do that, but I don't think Ubisoft cares that people don't finish games. I think they care yeah. that you buy the games and you buy the DLC, which maybe they care that you finish the games, but they'd rather you quit early and then buy the DLC than like burn yourself out by finishing the game.
So do you feel like it's a stronger marketing point to say that this game is bigger or that this game is smaller than the last game?
Oh, it's definitely a stronger marketing point to say bigger. People who complain about it like being too big will probably still buy it. They'll just play yeah. like 5 to 25 hours of it and be like, all right, I'm done. Like there was yeah. a thing today that was I think it was Ghost of Tsushima. They're like, it'll be about 60 hours long. And I was like, I get it. I get why they're saying that, but hearing that just makes me tired. Like
yeah. Like we'll talk about Ghost of Tsushima later on in the show, but yeah, there was I think in an IGN article where Jonathan Dornbush was interviewing them. He was talking about how they were talking about how this is the biggest thing that Sucker Punch has worked on in terms of the size and scope of the world. Yeah. Like the what we got from that state of play was actually just a chunk of what the open world is going to be. Like the open world is way bigger than that. And for me, like you know, I read that and I'm like, all right, cool, yeah. Like I mean that if they pull it off and if the way that the world unfolds is paced well, then you got me. Then I'm in. Mm-hmm. Then that sounds cool. Because I do like the idea of, oh man, this world feels endless. This world feels huge. I don't like it when it feels like that it's a requirement for me to spend a billion hours with this thing. Right? Like yeah. if getting all the Korok seeds was like a requirement to beat Breath of the Wild, I would not enjoy that experience. Right. Mm-hmm. But the fact that like I can get in there, beat the game in however long, right? Like, actually, I could even tell you how long the main campaign of Breath of the Wild is because I just, like, spent all my time doing side stuff. But say, like, the game's 50 hours, right? I can jump in, play the game for 50 hours, and be done with it and not be forced to you know, play hundreds of hours of a game, uncover the whole open world. Like, then I'm fine with it. Then I'm down with that.
Odyssey was like that, though. Like, you didn't have to do all these side things. It was just a lot of fun. There was one point, I think, between level, like, 25 and 35 or something, where you, like, people were complaining that they had to grind through that.
Yeah, they're low hits.
But, like, I didn't feel that. When I got to that point in the mission, I was, like, at level 40. So, like, I went right over that. So, I don't know. It depends on how you want to play it.
It's a larger problem with, I think, open world games and also, like, gaming culture a little bit, because we all have some FOMO of like there's content that we're going to miss. Like I was talking to a friend the other day who was saying she was really afraid to start playing Persona because like she was going to have a guide with her, and I was like, you don't need the guide, it's gonna be fine if you miss some, like, what do they call them, confidants,
like social links.
Yeah like if you miss some of those, it's okay. The second you change to a different game, you'll forget the fact that you like miss those. It's not a big deal, you'll watch them on YouTube. But to her it was like, no, I need to see everything in the game. And I think that's open world games kind of exasperate that problem. And when they say like, is Valhalla be better or bigger, I'm just gonna like, I fear I'm gonna look at the map and see like a billion icons and be like, well, I need to check this and this off, and hopefully like these are near each other, so I'll go do both at the same time. Like I've been doing that with Spider-Man. I'm not liking that DLC, but I'm 100%ing it, and I don't know why, because I think I just really enjoy Spider-Man as like a thing, or the fact that I platinum the original game, I have to keep that up. But we have to see all the content, and I think when there's a point where there's just straight up too much content, and I would actually be fine if they just said like, you know, none of it really matters. Like if you want to do it, do it. But for the most part, it's you're fine just doing the main campaign. That's the story we want to tell. They'll never say that because that's a selling point against the game. But I would be fine if they said that.
Kevin, for you as the Assassin's Creed fan in the room, is there a such thing as too big for Assassin's Creed?
Not if they built it the way they built Odyssey. When they did Origins, it did feel too big. It felt empty, too. Like, that was a big problem I had with Origins. I still play it. I looked into it recently because I said 60 hours. That was wrong. I played something like 32 hours. And I enjoyed Origin. It's just my problems with Origin is the story was convoluted, and the world felt empty. And yeah, it's funny,
it's like desert, right?
Yeah, but more than that, because like Odyssey is a lot of like seas, you know.
Okay, yeah, that makes
but,
sense.
But when you're like on your boat, the boat to boat combat is a lot of fun, and I think I've taken down like something like 180 boats on Odyssey just because I enjoy it and you get loot from it and stuff. But when you're walking around in the city or like on the actual islands, there's a lot going on, and like you'll just be walking, you'll see something, and if you interact with it, like later you might bump into people and talk to them and found out that you already completed the mission. Like that's what I was doing. Instead of like just fast traveling, I really enjoyed taking my boat and riding my horse all the way. I don't know. I just thought the gameplay mechanics was so much fun.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, like the thing that you're describing, Kevin, is I think the thing that makes open world games great, right? Like the idea that like, you know, you don't feel it. This is the thing actually me and Greg were talking about earlier, is that like I've not necessarily been a fan of the open worlds that feel like checklists, that feel like I'm just opening the map, looking at a bunch of different icons and just clearing
trying
out the
to
icons.
Knock them out,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, like that's not necessarily been an enjoyable experience for me, but the open worlds that I find the most enjoyable are the ones where I do feel like I'm engrossed and I'm immersed, and I don't feel compelled to play this game like it's a checklist. I'm playing it more so like I'm the character in that world, and I'm like, you know, I don't feel necessarily compelled to fast travel. I'm going through it and just clearing things as I go, exploring stories as I go. And yeah, like that feeling of talking to a character and you already have that side quest done because you're just having such a good time just hanging out in the world.
Yeah.
It's like the best feeling to me in an open world game.
It's funny because Imran was talking about Red Dead Redemption 2. Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. Yeah, right?
Yeah. Yep.
It's interesting because I remember playing those around the same time, and Red Dead Redemption 2, way too real. Like, you had to be careful where you rode with your horse, because if it went the wrong way, it would fall and die and be dead. And with Odyssey, like, your horse, sure, it can die, but it comes back. And that's just, like, a game, I've always thought, like, a game should be fun. And that's one of the things that, like, Assassin's Creed does, where it's like, I think once you hit, like, level 25, fall damage doesn't affect you anymore. And it's like, that's cool. Like, yeah, cool. Make it unreal. Like, I'm okay with that. Yeah. Shout out to
Greg.
I mean,
like, that's one of the reasons I've been playing Spider-Man still, is that just traveling around that world is in itself fun. And if you can make that happen in an open-world game, you could probably forgive a lot of sins of, okay, yeah, this mission was repetitive, but getting there was cool, so I'm okay with it.
Yeah, and that's, I think for me, it's hard to even speak on Assassin's Creed specifically, because I've been out of the Assassin's Creed game for a while. Like, I know that game's evolved into something that's way different from when Assassin's Creed 2 was out. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it's hard for me to really judge it based on how big or contained or small its open world is, because, like, to what we're saying here, like, each open world kind of stands as its own thing, right? Like, you kind of have to treat them like their own, because, like, the size of Spider-Man works because mechanically, like that's a city that is built for you to navigate around and for you to swing around, for you to like. It's built more like a playground than it is like a Breath of the Wild explorable kind of thing. And to what Kevin's kind of saying with Red Dead Redemption 2, right? Like for that open world, that for me was an open world that felt gigantic. The amount of slowness there was in terms of every single action you do, right? Like the amount of time it takes for you to get from point A to point B in that game, the amount of time it takes for you to even like do the animation where you get on your horse or get off your horse, or yeah, your horse dies and you just don't have a horse anymore. Like whenever things like that happen to kind of slow down the experience in this world that feels gigantic. Like I know for a lot of people that works because that is Western, and that is like, you know, you're role playing in almost the truest sense of the word. At that point, you know, for me, jumping into that game felt not as satisfying because of how slow it was, and because like I didn't feel like I could experience, I didn't feel compelled to experience the world, because the world felt almost bigger than I had the ability to explore at the rate that I wanted to.
Which is kind of like the Ubisoft and honestly a Sony MMO as well, of they sand down the rough edges of a game and then like use a fundamentally working template. And those usually that makes a big success in their games, like Spider-Man, like Assassin's Creed. Some people really appreciate those rough edges, and that's why they like. Again, we go back to Ghost of Tsushima, where they said the thing of you don't have to pick up items; like they just kind of like come to you.
Like you don't have to get off your horse to pick something up.
Yeah. Meanwhile, there's people who like that about Red Dead. Like that is their one of the things they enjoy about Red Dead is you get off their horse, you go up to the animal, and you skin it, and like the it provides you a benefit, and it's a more immersive thing.
Yeah.
Sony games and Ubisoft games tend to round down those edges, and that's totally fine. That's a extremely valid design choice.
I feel like that's such an interesting choice because at the end of the day, you're going to be doing that hundreds of times, right? Because you're going to need a lot of pelts. And it's one of those things that, like, after the 100th time, it's like, I've seen this animation so many times. There's not enough variety to make it feel unique. So it to me, it does the same thing where it's like, oh, like, here's the moment the game is broken. And this is also a moment where I can go grab a drink or something because I know how long this animation is going to take. Yeah. And it's just one of those interesting things. If the whole idea is to make it feel more immersive, like I feel like you have to do a lot of different animations to make it feel like it's a unique event, not just a repetitive one, you know?
Right. I mean, and that's honestly like we were having a conversation recently, and I think it might have been a post show about like Desert Island games. And I think I might have brought up Red Dead Redemption 2 and like, you know, I think Red Dead Redemption 2 is a game that I would have enjoyed way more if that was the only game I needed to play. Like, I could see myself falling in love with Red Dead Redemption 2 if, like, I was stuck with that game and I could only play that game. Because, yeah, to what Kevin's saying, right? Like, you know, you're in that game for, let's say, like, 100 hours. And each time I do an action, each time, like, I don't know, man, like, I pick something up off the ground. I pick up, like, food for resources or whatever, right? Like, that's a whole animation that I'm going through to do that. Each time I get on my horse, that's a whole animation I'm going through to do that, right? And like, you know, there are certain animations that like, yeah, getting on your horse, that's going to need to be a whole animation. But are picking up certain items or are doing certain things, does brushing your horse have to take 10 to 20 seconds, right? Or can that be like a 3-second, like, we get the gist of it kind of thing? And it's an interesting thing to see because I understand why Rockstar does it. I understand why they go all the way into making those animations a thing because like it really showcases the technology that they have, right? It showcases their engine, it showcases the power of like we were able to make this thing that feels fully realized, that feels real, that feels like you can fully get engrossed in it in that way. But yeah, then you look at it from a gameplay sense and it's like, man, I'm really spending a lot of time doing these things that I wish, like Far Cry, for example, you can have the full animations when you're like skinning a thing, or you can just turn those off and you can just automatically like get the pelts or whatever you're picking up, right? Like I always automatically turn it so that I'm not doing the animations because I'm like, dude, time is of the essence. I have 15 games to play this month alone. Like, let me go.
I mean, getting away from the specifics for animations for a second, like that's part of the problem of very long games is that how do you keep it from getting repetitive over 100 hours? And that's extremely difficult. Like, even I put 95 hours into Final Fantasy VII Remake. I love that game. Even towards the end of it, I'm like, yeah, move it along. I just want to get to the part that I like. That's a lot harder with an open world game because it's like, if it were like a linear timeline where I could drop, like drag and drop my character to wherever I wanted them to be, that's fine. But there's always stuff involved in doing any specific thing that lengthens that out.
I'm having an interesting time playing Persona 5 from like Persona 5 Royal from a similar sense where, I mean, Kev mentioned at the top of this, right, that like I'm playing what is like 120 hour RPG right now, and talking about how much a bigger game doesn't necessarily appeal to me off the bat. But even while playing Persona 5 Royal, as I'm playing, I do have moments where I'm like, could they have sped some of the stuff up a bit? Like, is legit everything here necessary? Like, does this game have to be 130 hours long? And now that I'm halfway through it, I'm like, okay, yeah, like, I'm still enjoying this experience. This is still going to be, by the time I finish this game, likely one of my favorite games I've ever played. But, yeah, like, at what point is that that length necessary for a game to be? Or is that just, like, overall just an egregious thing? Or does it just depend on the player? which is probably like that latter one, right? It probably just depends on who's playing the game. Yeah.
But for some people, 100 hours is like the minimum they expect from a $60 game.
Yeah,
for other people, it's like, I would pay $60 for a game that's 6 hours, but it's a very good 6 hours. It all depends on the game, depends on the player, depends on the design.
Yeah, exactly. Story number two. Last of Us Part Two Special Edition PS4 has been revealed. I'm pulling this from Joe Screbbles, a made-up name, at IGN. Kevin, in the doc, I have a link to the IGN article so you can pull up the images. Joe Screbbles, though, writes, Sony has revealed a Special Edition PS4 Pro based on The Last of Us Part 2 alongside other branded peripherals. There's also a Last of Us 2 beer tie-in on the way. Launching alongside the game on June 19th, the collection themed after Ellie's new tattoo sleeve will include a PS4 Pro with controller, a Seagate 2 TB hard drive, and a wireless headset. Let's see here. Kevin, are you... Kevin has it pulled up. Honestly, this might be the best Special Edition PS4 I've seen. Like, I feel like I always have the complaint whenever they reveal a new one that, like, I usually don't like the look for them. Like, the Death Stranding PS4, I wasn't, like, big on. The Spider-Man PS4 was kind of dope. But, yeah, like, usually I feel like they're very hit or miss with their special editions. And honestly, like, yeah, all of what we're seeing here, like, all the peripherals and stuff for it looks sick.
I don't like the title on the front of the PS4.
Yes, that's my one critique also, is I don't like The Last of Us Part II. Being on the front of the PS4 like that. Like, I wish it was just, like, the top design there, which is engraved, which is really cool.
Yeah. I do find it fascinating that they're, like, it's literally just an external Seagate drive hooked up to the, like, via USB to the PS4. Yeah. Like, when they said, because I hadn't seen this before you mentioned it, I thought, like, I assumed it was going to be a internal hard drive, but I guess it's just like, all right, we got these Seagates, let's put them with this.
Yeah, no, that's also an interesting choice that I'm actually just, like, realizing as you say it. At least this Last of Us 2 branded, though, which is pretty cool.
They clearly put some work into the case. It's just, yeah.
So the, Joe Screbbles in his article, he continues, because he has some quotes from Naughty Dog here, which I think are interesting. He writes, Naughty Dog art director John Sweeney explained that the choice to theme the console after Ellie's tattoo was based on fan reaction to the design. Quote, when we first revealed The Last of Us Part 2, we had no idea how quickly fans would embrace Ellie's tattoo. Within a day, we started seeing real-life versions showing up on social media and fans having been sharing their photos of their new tattoos with us week after week ever since. When the opportunity arose to create a custom PS4 Pro for The Last of Us Part 2, I worked with our graphic designer at the time, Angel Garcia, and we considered a few different ideas. But we kept coming back to Ellie's tattoo. By that point, it had become a symbol of the game and for the community, much like the Firefly logo in the first game. It was the clear choice, but we wondered, what if it could be engraved? It hadn't been done before, so we weren't sure it was even possible, but thanks to the incredible efforts of the teams at PlayStation, we found a way. Which I think is a really cool thing. Like, the engraving really makes this makes the console.
Here. I'm going to be honest, I did not realize Ellie had a tattoo until this story.
Honestly, I'm with you. Like, I think I knew she had a tattoo. I didn't realize, like, the tattoo was a thing. Like, I didn't realize the tattoo was a thing that people had latched onto and been like, oh, yeah, like, Ellie's tattoo. Yeah. I didn't realize people were hyped for it. But
did you ever watch Lost?
It's really cool. No, I didn't.
So by the third season, they're kind of meandering in that thing, and they made an episode about the main character's tattoo and how he got it. And, like, that's the point where I'm like, yeah, I'm checking out on this show because this is just, they don't know what they're doing anymore. But that's kind of how I feel about this in a way. Not that they don't know what they're doing, but, like, I don't really care about her tattoo that much. It's a cool design. Nice. But I personally am not at the point where I would latch on.
Yeah. I mean, I figure, like, the fact that they're putting it on the PS4 makes me think that it's going to be a thing in the game. Like, they're going to reference it and it's going to mean something. Mm-hmm. Like, this tattoo represents my mother or something like that. Like, I figure that's going to be the connection that makes you go, like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah,
but
I got this when Joel died, blah blah.
Exactly.
I have no idea about Last of Us spoilers. I'm just saying, like, that was a joke.
Ricky McFly writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, Sony is releasing a Last of Us Part 2 themed PS4 Pro next month, despite issues plaguing the global supply chain during this pandemic, and in the face of the incoming PS5 launch. Are collectors enough to carry sales? Is Sony banking on the interest of people who still don't own a PS4?
Hardware was down. No, hardware wasn't down this year. It was I don't remember, because they said they had the best quarter ever, but I believe it was in terms of software. So I guess this is like the last ditch thing of like, they know people are not going to, or there will not be enough PS5s for people to buy this year. So I think this is them going, we have a cheaper option. We have a limited edition option. Big Last of Us. If you're a huge Last of Us 2 fan and you just want another PS4, here you go. Or you never upgraded to the Pro, here you go. I don't think it's a... They're not going to not sell out of these, but I don't think there's going to be a huge number of them.
Yeah, I kind of get the same vibe, too. I feel like at this point, PlayStation, they have a gauge for how many people, one, have bought a PS4, but then, like, what the demand for a PS4 would be. And so I figure, like, you look at those numbers, you then look at The Last of Us Part 2, and you look at, like, all right, what would the demand for a special edition be, and you produce them based off of that. Yeah. And so, like... You know, I can't really speak to like whether or not a special edition PS4 would have caused them to delay the original game, like, because like, yeah, to the point of the question, right? Like supply chain was like a big reference in terms of why The Last of Us Part 2 was delayed indefinitely. And yeah, you would figure a special edition PS4 would be like like that would weigh heavy on supply chain and manufacturing and stuff.
I'd imagine, but it's probably a bunch of pre-built PS4s that they just changed the top case on, and change the case in general on it.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, you figure when it comes down to it, like with the shifts that they've already made with The Last of Us Part 2, you figure that this factors into it. Not necessarily like this is right why they delayed, but they see this as a factor, and they're manufacturing based on what's going on right now.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, like, If you're a big fan of The Last of Us and you are someone who cares enough to buy a PS4 based on it, then you probably own a PS4. You might not own a PS4 Pro, but they're probably factoring that in terms of the numbers of how many they're going to create.
Yeah. Story number three. We now know even more about Ghost of Tsushima. This is thanks to a YouTuber, Julian Chies, who I think actually referenced earlier in this episode because of the Assassin's Creed stuff. Julian here was able to speak to Jason Connell, the creative director on Ghost of Tsushima. A user on Reddit, the DK Mario link, was able to break down the interview, because the interview was in a different language, then got translated. The DK Mario link on Reddit took that translation, bullet pointed it, and this is what I have for you here. So this is the new info we have on Ghost of Tsushima. Zelda and Shadow of the Colossus was a big inspiration for the game, especially for the artistic direction. This is all coming from Jason Connell, the creative director. Sucker Punch wanted the colors to be as vibrant as possible based on those inspirations.
That's a weird... Shadow of the Colossus is not a bright, colorful game.
I feel like the colors is more the vibrancy of the colors is more a reference to Zelda, and then like the look of the world in terms of like how kind of I want to call it empty, but like dissolute. How kind of vast it appears, but yeah, dissolute, actually that's the perfect word, right? Like I feel like that's more of a reference to Shadow of Colossus.
Okay, that was a weird sentence construction, but that's fine.
Yeah. The wind is the main way to navigate the game world, which you saw in the demo. There are no markers. The instrument that we see Jin playing in the video will be the only one present in the game, and Jason, again, the creative director, did not want to say what it would be used for, which also sounds like a Zelda Ocarina of Time thing. Like, is this like an Ocarina kind of situation?
I mean, it was like a brief scene in the State of Play where he was like, Jin was on top of a mountain playing a flute. So I imagine there's... Maybe it's like a marker of some sort, like our fast travel.
That'd be really cool, yeah, to use that as fast travel. And that wouldn't be like that wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility. Like if you look at kind of what they've done already, right, with like the way animals will lead you to side quests, the way that like smokestacks will like lead to side activities. Like yeah, for them to like integrate, let's say fast travel or mechanics like that into like you playing a flute totally makes sense.
Yeah.
We can hunt animals in the game, but there's nothing to be gained by doing it. Animals are mainly there to be more immersed in the universe and guiding you. The standoff mode can be activated anytime, even in infiltration. There will be much more stances than the two we saw in that video. They'll be used to apprehend the different types of enemies. The main weapon in the game, the main weapon of the game will be and will remain the katana throughout the game, but there will be many other weapons and gadgets. If you wear heavy armor, you'll be less agile, so it'll make infiltration harder. there are a lot less side stories in the game, or there are a lot of side stories in the game where you can build more or less strong relationships with different characters to learn more about their stories. But it's up to the player's freedom, and you can miss them. And then lastly, the music is primarily composed by Shigeru Umebayashi, who is most famous for his work on In the Mood of Love, but has a large breadth of work in the film industry.
Sounds pretty cool. Are you planning to be like the ninja, the dishonorable ninja? Or are you planning to just like... Because I think I'm just going to be the big tanky samurai that just walks into the front gate and parries everything.
So the more... So there have been quite a few articles coming out today, because I imagine like an embargo lifted for the interview with the creative director. Mm-hmm. The more I've read, especially this morning, it seems like it's going to be less like choose one or the other, and more so like you start off as samurai, and as you play, you become ghost, but you can still go back to samurai if you want to, which is like an interesting thing, because the way they've talked about it so far before today, I've always seen it as like a almost similar to Infamous, of like Infamous is choose bad or choose good. This would have been like choose ghost or choose samurai, and you might still get flavors of that in the game. But from what I understand, like, yeah, as you play, you're gonna become more and more ninja, which I think is a cool idea, especially if like they integrate what we kind of just talked about, right? If they have that growth, but at the same time make it so that like you as a player can be the one to decide, like, okay, yeah, like ghost seems cool in these elements, but I want to continue in the way of the samurai because I like that playstyle, then I think that'd be cool. That said, like, I think I'm gonna go ghost. I think I'm gonna go ninja, just because like I like the idea of approaching situations in ways that I have to be more creative than skillful in terms of combat. Like, I just enjoy like problem solving in that way more so.
I kind of wonder if there's an option for like, not an option necessarily, but a viable playstyle of being ghost, like being a ninja, but still just like going head first into everything, like running up to the front gates, being super fast and like confounding enemies around them. Like, I wonder if that's, or you'll just die immediately. Like, oh no, ninja is not well suited to direct combat.
I read, and I want to say it was in the IGN article written by Jonathan Dornbush, where they were talking about how in that state of play, when they were showing off the ghost infiltration, like, you could at any point just jump down. And I think the way they explained it was that you'll basically like switch to samurai if you want to like jump, like, you know, stop doing stealth and then face enemies head on. But I think that's something that we'll see and understand more as we actually play the game, because I think that would be cool to have like a head on ninja type style.
Yeah,
like, I'm with you, that'd be cool.
Like, more Naruto ninja than like traditional ninja, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And then our last story number four, PlayStation Now reaches 2.2 million subscribers. I'm pulling this from Matthew Handrahan at gamesindustry.biz, who writes, PlayStation Now has more than 2.2 million subscribers around 6 years after it's launched in North America. Sony confirmed the latest figures for its subscription service in an investor presentation, which showed its audience doubling in the space of a year. PlayStation Now had more than 1 million subscribers at the end of March 2019, and that rose to more than 2.2 million by the end of April 2020. While the service has been available in North America since 2014 and rolled out globally the following year, it only offered the option to stream its catalog of games at first. The option to download games to play offline was added in September 2018, at which point it had fewer than 1 million subscribers. Sony noted an immediate improvement in gameplay time as a result, and the service has reached 2.2 million subscribers in the 18 months since. However, while PS Now has doubled its reach in the space of a year, it still lags behind Xbox Game Pass. Microsoft's service adds first-party Xbox games on the day of their release, and it now has more than 10 million subscribers. Imran, does that surprise you whatsoever?
It doesn't surprise me, because I've heard, like, even though I personally don't use PlayStation Now, I've heard it's very quietly gaining a following of, like, people who are into the idea just wanted to expand a bit. And I think Sony's ready to do that. Like, they're hesitant about certain things. Like, they'll never go as far as Microsoft is going with the game. Or, not to say never. They are currently not planning to go as far as Microsoft will go as Game Pass with, like, all their first-party titles there day one. Like, big things there immediately. But it does seem like if you're coming into this generation kind of late, then PlayStation Now is a fantastic, not even for coming into play. If you don't play that many games, it seems like a great service to avail yourself of, especially with the fact that you can download games now.
Yeah. This story is interesting to me because I also, like, I could have sworn I've read elsewhere that PS Now had higher numbers than Xbox Game Pass, but I don't know if that's just been, like, over the last year, Xbox Game Pass is quietly just, like, fucking, like, zoomed up in numbers, which could be the case because at a certain point, like, especially, like, within the last year, Microsoft was making it rain, Xbox yeah. Game Pass. Like, you could get Xbox Game Pass for a dollar and combine, essentially, like, your Games of Gold service, or not Games of Gold, your Xbox Gold, mm-hmm. You could combine that with Game Pass and then, like, spread that out, because that's what I did. I paid $1, and all of a sudden, I, like, extended my services to, like last month, and that was, like, last year that I did that.
Yeah, I spent maybe $50, and I have, like, Game Pass Ultimate for 2 years or something.
Yeah, like, Xbox has been really hustling to get Game Pass in the hands of everybody, which also, to your point, like I don't see Sony necessarily having the drive to, at least right now, to do that, right? Like there's value in their first parties in terms of how well they sell, right? Like Last of Us Part Two in terms of sales numbers is going to do amazing regardless of being on PS Now or not. Mm-hmm. And like I feel like there's still selling the first parties, I feel like it's like that's still a powerful place for Sony to be in. Like I feel like if Sony then bundled all their first party games with PS Now, the ecosystem looks way different in terms of how we, like, I don't know, just look at PlayStation and how we approach playing their games.
But, I mean, it's like with Days Gone. I mentioned this a couple of, like, I think last week's Gamecast, but like, would that game sell as well if there were a free option to play it? And the answer is almost certainly not, but just how much is the question. And I don't think Sony's willing to take that risk and see how that works out. But I think this PS Now makes a lot of sense for them right now, especially as they move up to the PS5. Like, for better or worse, there probably won't be a lot of PS5s early on. There probably won't be a lot of software for that, like, that's exclusive to the PS5. Mm-hmm. There will be some, but not exclusively. Like, the entire industry is not going to shift immediately to next generation for at least a year or two, but having PlayStation Now helps cover some of those gaps. So it being successful and it being a working thing is smart for them. They need to tone down a little bit on the price. I think it needs to be a little bit cheaper and it needs to be much better advertised.
I think it needs to be better advertised. Like, I think for sure it needs to, like, or not that it needs to, because I feel like Sony just doesn't put it at the forefront. Like they, I don't think they have the care for it, especially compared to Xbox Game Pass. Like, Sony obviously wants PS Now to do well. They obviously want people, they obviously want the numbers to grow, right? Which is the reason why they're reporting on, like, them doubling numbers over the last year. Mm-hmm. But, like, I feel like PS Now, for what it's doing right now, is doing exactly as well as Sony wants it to do. Xbox Game Pass, on the other hand, on the Microsoft side of things, like, they would like everybody who has an Xbox to have Game Pass. Like, I feel like if you ask them, like, that would be the case.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, PlayStation just doesn't have that same goal in mind.
Then it does raise the question of is it just a value add? Is it, like, one of their main prongs of their, like, it's a confusing thing. I
see it as a value add for sure. Like, yeah. I don't know if it started off as a value add. But I think if it didn't start off as a value add, it definitely is now. Like, it definitely is, like, all right, like, this service, like, PS Now at this point doesn't suck by any means. Like, PS Now is very serviceable as, like, you know, especially now that you can download games, right? Like, it's a pretty good service. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not necessarily the thing that we're going to put at the forefront of PlayStation, because we have, like, we want to push our games. We want to push, I guess, VR also. Like, there are so many other prongs that we have that we want to push that, like, PS Now doesn't necessarily need to be the main thing that's on everybody's tongue, especially when every time it comes up, it is in comparison to Game Pass or to, like, other streaming services, which in that case isn't like delivering as much. Like, I feel like I feel like as, like, a talking point, like, PS Now has never been a thing where it's never been beloved by people the way that, like, Game Pass, for example, is beloved.
I feel like they could make it though. It just the lack of drive.
For sure. Definitely. Imran, I'm excited to see the future and to see if PlayStation decides to go after it and make it make it a thing that PS Now is beloved. But that future is probably so far away. If I want to know what's coming out today on Mom and Grop Shops, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah. Thanks, Evan. Out today, we got Golf With Your Friends for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, PC, and Mac. The Wonderful 101 Remastered for PS4, Switch, and PC. This is really exciting. Gorn for PSVR. A Fold Apart for PS4 and Xbox One. Selection 6 for PC. Air for PC. Dark Knights with Poe and Munro, or Poe and Munro, I guess, for a PC and Mac. Nine Till Void for PC. If Found for PC and Mac. Cranked Up for PC. Super Circuit Breakers for PC. Boreal Tales for PC. And then Mafia Trilogy has been announced and is being released today. Although currently it only includes Mafia 2 Remastered and Mafia 3 Definitive Edition, which includes all the DLC. Mafia 1 Definitive Edition will be coming August 28th. And when I was reading all this, it was a little bit confusing. But Mafia 1, it will be included with the trilogy when it comes out. And so if you buy Mafia Trilogy, you will get that later on. And that's August 28th. And Mafia 1 is being rebuilt from the ground up in the Mafia 3 engine with new content. And this is all on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Emmett Watkins Jr. writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you came and says, "Howdy, blessing Imran. Just a quick deal of the day for you. You guys surely have heard all the Mafia news, which includes the fact that all of Mafia 3's DLC content is now free on Xbox One and PS4, with Steam getting the DLC through a free paid update or a free update soon. I wanted to highlight this, as many people might have claimed Mafia 3 for free on PS Plus a while back and might already own it unknowingly. And on a side note, the DLC is worth installing. The new stories added bring out aspects of Lincoln's character you don't see in the base game, plus mechanics like slow-mo gunplay and driving are implemented, and they make the base gameplay a lot more engaging." So there you go. All of your Mafia news, all your Mafia updates, your Mafia deals of the day, all of it bundled right there for you.
I really wonder if I did, like, I have no recollection of ever claiming that game on PS Plus, but that doesn't necessarily mean I didn't.
I feel the same way. And actually, on that note, kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong, did Mafia 3 release on PS Plus? Because I don't remember that. I want to take Emmett at his word, because Emmett likes Mafia, and Emmett is the homie, and Emmett wouldn't steer me wrong. But I don't remember that game coming out on PS Plus. I feel like I would have been excited for that. But maybe it's just something that completely wiped from my memory.
I mean, granted, like, there's a like a year and a half, 2 years where I just completely checked out of PS Plus. I still redeemed the games when they were interesting, but I never really paid much attention to it. So,
all right, I looked into it. August 2018, Mafia 3 and Dead by Daylight.
Huh. Boom.
So
Emmett Watkins Jr., the homie, I'll never steer in us wrong. So Mafia 3 did come out on PS Plus indeed. So yeah, if you have it, there you go. I need to check if I have it, because I had no idea that I owned, like, I might have fucked up and not claimed it, but that doesn't sound like me in 2018, and so I probably have Mafia 3 and all that the game DLC.
It has a hell of a story.
That's what I keep hearing, and so I want to try it out. It's definitely, like, firm in the backlog. And then lastly on Out Today, a free American Wildflower map awaits Red Dead Online players this week, while Camp Dogs can be purchased for 40% off the regular price. I love when I read an update and I have no idea what any of it means.
Camp Dogs, that's one of the worst.
I'm like, oh, you can have Camp Dogs. Sweet. New dates for you. Phantasy Star Online 2 is launching on PC May 27th.
Hell yeah.
Now's time for reader mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Brooke Linen. Bringing comfort into your home is the ultimate form of self-care. And now more than ever, it's important to take care of yourself and each other. You spend one-third of your life in your sheets. Don't you want them to be insanely comfortable? So put comfort first, like with new bedding, loungewear, towels, and more. Kinda Funny loves Brooke Linen. Tim says it keeps him comfortable, and he's able to get the right colors that match with his bedroom. Brooke Linen products help you find comfort in the little things, morning routines, extra soft sheets, plush towels, comfortable loungewear, etc. It's hard to imagine a summer stuck inside your house, but if you have to do it to keep everyone safe, I want it to be as comfortable as possible. That's where Brook Lennon comes in. Brook Lennon's Memorial Day event is going on now, and you don't want to miss out on all the big savings, including their newest Hammam and Linen collections. But if you can't wait, get 10% off your first order and free shipping with the promo code GAMES only at brooklinen.com. Brook Lennon, everything you need to live your most comfortable life. We're also brought to you by ExpressVPN. Being stuck at home these days, you probably don't think much about internet privacy on your own home network. Fire up incognito mode on your browser and no one can see what you're doing, right? Wrong. Even in incognito mode, your online activity can still be traced, even if you clear your browsing history. Your internet service provider can still see every single website you've ever visited. That's why, even when you're at home, you should never go online without using ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN makes sure your internet service provider can't see what sites you visit. Instead, your internet connection is rerouted through ExpressVPN's secure servers. Each ExpressVPN server has an IP address that's shared among thousands of users. That means everything you do is anonymized and can't be traced back to you. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your data with best-in-class encryption, so your information is always protected. Use the internet with confidence from your computer, tablet, or smartphone. ExpressVPN has you covered on every device. Simply tap one button and you're protected. ExpressVPN is the fastest and most trusted VPN on the market. It's rated number one by CNET, Wired, The Verge, and countless more. So protect your online activity today with the VPN that you should trust to secure your privacy. Visit our special link at expressvpn.com/games, and you can get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/games. expressvpn.com/games to learn more. Imran.
Mm-hmm.
Weissmark writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, Sony says that the PS5 lineup will be revealed soon. Did you see this, by the way?
Yeah, it was like the big financial report. People were stayed up to like see what they say about the PS5. It's like, yeah, we'll reveal games soon.
Yeah.
That was the only thing they said.
Yeah. So they said the PS5 lineup will be revealed soon. What do you guys think they'll announce first? Something we can assume is coming, like Spider-Man 2 or Horizon, or something we don't really expect, like an Infamous or something totally new?
I think it'll be a combination of all of those things. Not necessarily both Spider-Man and Horizon. I would be shocked if they showed both those games at once. But I would bet they're both ready to show. I bet they're both ready to say, like, yeah, these games are in development. Here's what it will look like. Here's the differences between the last one. Like, not minute differences, but like a big overarching thing. But yeah, I would assume some of those questions will get filled in by gaps by third parties. Like, I would be shocked, or would not be shocked to see, like, a major third party have a game that's like, and this is exclusive to PS4 and PC, or PS5 and PC, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what would be unexpected now, because everyone has speculated about everything. Like, what, aside from like a new IP, everyone, like, we're at the point where people are claiming Castlevania has been bought by Sony, which I don't believe. I think Silent Hill is true. I don't think Castlevania is true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, I think whatever Blue Point is working on will probably be a surprise and could involve, you know, those rumors, but who knows?
I think people have already guessed that quite a bit. So yep. Whatever it could possibly be, I'm sure it has been guessed a lot.
Mm. Yeah. So like, I think you will 100% get Blue Point's game, which will come as something that I think that'll count as like not necessarily a new IP, because like we know Blue Point is a studio that remakes games. But I think that'll count as like something fresh, I guess, or like not unexpected, but it's not like the Horizon or Spider-Man. Like these Horizon, Spider-Man, God of War, you know, these are games that we expect, and these are games that, like, you know, if they announce those at the PS5, you know, lineup reveal, that's not those aren't going to be things where it's like, oh snap, like my mind's blown, I didn't see that coming. Like, we all see those games coming. Exciting, but yeah, I expect to see Horizon for sure. Spider-Man 2 or God of War, I expect those to be logos possibly, but like, I'm not even like holding my breath that those will be there. I think at most we'll get like a logo tease for possibly Spider-Man or God of War or both. But then, yeah, I think there'll be at least like one or two new IPs in terms of first party. I mean, I don't know what those could be though.
It's a balancing act, right? Because like,
it is.
You want to show people enough things to get them excited about the PS5 and like go like, oh yeah, They showed a God of War, and I love God of War, so I'm going to buy this next one. Or they showed the logo, so I know one's coming. At the same time, like, you don't want to throw all your heavy hitters out in the first couple of years, because then in years 4 through 7, what do you put out? So, or God forbid, things get delayed, and you have, like, oh, well, they showed the... How long did it take Dream to came out? Dream came out about 5 years into the PS4 lifecycle, despite being at the reveal. And granted, Dream is not like a, not necessarily a mass media exciting thing or mass audience exciting thing, but it did take quite a while. Final Fantasy VII Remake took 5 years. Kingdom Hearts took, it would have been 2013, so 6 years. Like this sort of stuff, you need to plot it out a little bit. It's not just about what are we ready to show, but what do we think is smart to show right now? And I don't think I feel like if they go too heavy on it, it's going to backlash in a hard way.
Yeah, and I think the difficult thing with the balancing act is that, like, there are games that we know for sure that they're working on that they haven't, like, announced or talked about necessarily, but, like, I know I'm sounding like a broken record, but, like, we all know that God of War 2 exists. We all know that Spider-Man 2 exists. We all know that Horizon Zero Dawn 2 exists. Is it worth it to just, like, not show those off because you want to be able to announce those later on? Or do you just go, like, fuck it. Like, we all know, you know, like, these aren't really secrets. Like, you can very much assume that these games are real. So, like, let's just tell you that these games are real. I think the more interesting thing is, like, what are the new things that they reveal, right? Like, Weissmark references Infamous, which I don't expect to see Infamous. But, like, you know, do we see Sony, like, go into their back catalog and bring back games we don't expect? Do we see, like, some sort of, like, Twisted Metal revival? Like, that doesn't sound like modern Sony, but who knows? Those are the things that kind of keep me interested. Like, what is, like, do we see, and this won't happen, do we see Deep Down get re-revealed? Absolutely not, because that backfired. But, like, you know, what are those moments? What are those games that, like, we don't know about that, like, are going to come left field from the lineup reveal?
They're in a weird spot right now, right? Because, like, two of their major studios are finishing up big projects right now. So we're not going to see a new thing from Naughty Dog or Sucker Punch. But, and, like, I'm sure that, Sony Bend is probably working on a new Days Gone or something.
Yeah.
But they're probably not ready to show it right now.
Yeah, I feel like you're not ready to show that. You have, like, I'm trying to think of other Sony studios. Japan Studio is probably working on a thing or two, right, for PS5 that may be ready to show or not. Who knows?
So, like, let's say they do announce, say, a new Uncharted or a new whatever. The immediate response in people's heads are going to be like, that's probably not Naughty Dog. That's probably not Sucker Punch. Like, this isn't the studio that I know makes the good version of this game. So that in itself is going to be a dangerous proposition if they decide to do that at a reveal event. I think they will probably have very interesting software to show. I don't think it's necessarily going to be all the big hitters we expect.
That Uncharted announcement would be interesting because I think if you do that, you would then have to say that, like say you're having, like, I don't know, in Sony Bend, for example. Say Sony Bend, they're not working on Days Gone 2. They're working on a new Uncharted game. If you did that, you would have to then say, like, oh, also these people who worked on Uncharted 4 or Uncharted Lost Legacy are also working on this game with them. And I think you're able to kind of smooth that over that way. But yeah, like, I'm super curious to see, like, what they come out and do, because I feel like they have to throw things that we're just, like, not expecting.
Yeah. I feel like we'll probably find out within the next month.
My dog Nick96 from Massachusetts writes into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames just like you can and says, hey KFGD, I finally got my hands on a copy of the script book for Marvel Spider-Man. I think it's awesome a game script is getting released. I wish more games would do this. Personally, I'd love for games like Metal Gear Solid, The Last of Us, or God of War 2018 to get script books. Are there any games you'd like to see a script for? Have a great day, my dog Nick96.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah. And it's pretty cool. I think it comes with, like, I don't want to assume things. I think I feel like I heard it came with, like, an art book situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's an all-in-one thing. Kindoffunny.com/you're wrong if I'm wrong on that. But it's a really cool idea, right? Like, that's, like, a really cool thing. I can't think of, like, games that I would want a script for, though. Like that, yeah. I'd want to read the script. Like, if anything, like maybe like a big RPG. Like, I want to see the Bible that is like a Fallout game or like a Witcher type deal, just to see like how that stuff looks to be written out in script form. But like, yeah, that's like literally the only thing, just to see what that would look like.
Yeah, I'm not a big script reader. Like, I know some people who like they collect scripts. They really enjoy having scripts from movies they really like. It's never been my thing, but I think I would probably enjoy Final Fantasy VII, like the original. Or Ocarina of Time, like have those and like just be able to open it up as like, here's the part where Milan says you can't get through, or Milo says you can't get through the thing to the Deco Tree. Like, that's funny. That would be neat. I don't think I would ever sit there and read it, but it would be a cool thing to own.
Honestly, like if they did do script books for like retro or I guess just older games, I think I could be super into that, especially if they're like N64 era or like Super Nintendo era, like when dialogue wasn't necessarily didn't necessarily get the love and attention that dialogue gets nowadays in terms of writing, right? Like, you know, Final Fantasy VII, the original as a script book, I would absolutely love to read that, because like playing it right now, like so much of that dialogue kind of comes off as a little bit janky, because like it's PS1 era, right? Like it's an older RPG. Like, you know, games weren't what they are nowadays, and so like, you know, it'd be fun just sit there and just like to read it on paper, just to have fun with it.
You know what I would want
DK64.
I'd want older games this way. You might be a little young to remember this, but back in the day, Nintendo Power used to have like these full spreads of like the entire level of a game, and so here's like screens of each single part. And I would love an art book for art. I don't know what you'd call it, like a level design Bible for a game, for an older game.
That'd be cool.
Just those things in there.
Just like all that, the screens?
Yeah, for, let's say, Ghosts and Goblins or something.
Yeah, I would love that for like something like Pokemon. Like, just a book that is like, here's each screen from Pokemon as you remember it, and just for you to look through and have fun with.
Yeah, that would be great.
Now it's time to squad up. Jack Barton writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames with a squad up on PS4. Jack writes, "Hey guys, I'm looking to get the double trophy in Saints Row Gat Out of Hell. The trophy requires you to play with someone on co-op for 3 hours. The game was released on PS Plus a while ago, so if anyone wants to download it and just leave the game idle for a few hours, add me on PSN. My username is FascinatedJack. Thanks, guys." So there you go. If you wanna download Saints Row Gat Out of Hell and just leave your game idle for a few hours, or just play with Jack. I feel like that'd be a fun thing to do also. Just play with Jack. Fascinated Jack on PSN. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong, where you write in. Let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong. Nanobiologist writes in and says, "Reminder, Ubisoft confirmed that for Valhalla, you will not need to grind or do side quests to progress the main story," which is what Kevin was mentioning earlier, that like you don't necessarily need to do everything.
Yeah, so that's not for Odyssey, was like level gated. So it's good they took the criticism to heart there.
Let's see here. Yeah. People were writing in telling us that Mafia 3 was indeed on PS Plus, which we figured out. Thank you so much. Missed out today from Nanobiologist. Overwatch's anniversary event begins today, which is really exciting because I might just do that right after this.
Matt Dallas is I said 5 years to Final Fantasy VII remake. Dreams was 6.5, 7 years.
So, oh yeah, because Dreams was at the PS4 was at the reveal event. So that's 2013. Then came out in 2020. So that's honestly like 7 years, which is crazy to think about. Looks like that's it for You're Wrong. Tomorrow's hosts are Greg and Gary Witta. Stay tuned for Witta Wednesday. Remember, Gamescast is recording tomorrow afternoon. The topic: the best year in gaming history. I saw Barrett put up a tweet on at Kinda Funny Vids on Twitter. You can respond, letting us know what you think is the best year in gaming and why. Of course, that's also on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames if you want to write in there. And this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.